And here's the Maise. This is a Maise at the time of the Rebbe Maharash. And there was a chassid of the Rebbe Maharash, and his name was Reb Shmuel. Reb Shmuel Brown. And Reb Shmuel had a big mashke factory where they made bottles and bottles of mashke, of vodka, and of schnapps, and of l'chaim mashkes. And it was a big, big business with a lot of workers. And one of the rules in every business at that time was that an officer of the king, a tax officer, had to come and he had to collect money from every business. They had to pay taxes to the king. They had to pay money according to how much money the business was making. For example, by Reb Shmuel's factory, they made bottles and bottles of mashke. So let's say for every 10 bottles of mashke that they made, they had to pay one bottle of mashke to the king, or the money for one bottle of mashke. If the king wanted mashke, he took the mashke. If he wanted the money for it, they figured out how much it was worth. So let's say if one bottle cost $1 and 10 bottles cost $10, so either you give one bottle of mashke to the king or $1 to the king. And if it's going to be 20 bottles, for every 20 bottles you have to pay $2 to the king or 2 bottles of mashke. And for 100 bottles you have to give 10 bottles. And that's the way it was. Now, the officer had a way of finding out how much you had to give to the king. And you had to pay it. In this case, Reb Shmuel was the one who had to pay it because he was the owner and the boss of the factory. He was responsible. And if, chas v'shalom, you would not pay the king his taxes, or you did some kind of a trick to get out of it, like some people sometimes did, and they would find out, because the officers were very smart and very sharp, and they had their ways of finding all kinds of things out, you would be in gigantic, big trouble with the king. You better watch out. So most people didn't start up, and most people didn't try. Now, in Reb Shmuel's factory, this is how they collected the tax. One day, this officer from the king came in, and he was carrying a box. And he took out from the box a thing that looked like a big clock. Well, not too big, but big enough. And the clock, it wasn't really a clock. It's called a meter. But it looks like a clock, and it has numbers on it. And he walked over to the end of the factory. Now, as he's walking through the factory, he walks from the beginning to the end. In the beginning, there's these big, big, gigantic barrels and vats, like big pots, that they put all of the different grain, like wheat and barley in, and they add the water, and they do all kinds of things there, and they add different things to make it into mashke. And when it goes through the pipes, because there's big pipes that go from these big barrels and big vats and big pots, when the mashke is already made from the water and mixing up with the grains and the different things. It flows through these big pipes and it goes through the factory and it goes through different things and different filters and different kinds of like machines that they had in those days that they weren't necessarily electric but they worked in certain ways to do things to the mashke until the pipe went all the way down to the other end of the factory, and over there is where they put it into bottles. The last step is they have to put the finished mashke into bottles. And there are workers over there that they went to this big faucet there, they turn on the faucet, out pours the mashke, like you have in your house a water faucet, but you open it up over there in the factory and out comes the mashke. And they fill up the bottles, Then they put on the cover of the bottle. They put on a kind of a label and a kind of a wrapper around it. Then they put it into boxes, and that's what they take to the stores or the marketplaces or wherever they're going to sell it. And this officer took the clock, this meter, and he screwed it on to the end by the faucet right before the place where the pipe comes out and they fill the bottles. And he explained, he said to everybody there, every time you turn on the faucet, it flows through the meter. And the hand on the meter that looks like a clock and moves another number. If you fill up one bottle of mashke, the hand moves to the number one. You fill up another bottle of mashke, it moves to number two. And so it goes. Each time you fill up a bottle of mashke, the hand moves to a different number, and it shows how many bottles you filled up. And the way the thing was built, it could go up to 100 and 200 and even 1,000. That's how many bottles it could show. Now, once a week, or once in 2 weeks, the officer would come into the factory, he would read the meter, and he would see, for example, it says, this week, or in this time, since I was here last, the meter says, let's say, 500. Okay? He would write down 500 on a special paper, that this was the special paper from the king. And he would go to Reb Shmuel, and he would say, you have to pay $500 to the king, or give him 500 bottles of mashke. And he would take out a special key, and he would turn it in the special place in the meter and reset it back to zero. So he'll come back next time and he's going to read it now from this new time to the next time to see how many bottles it was. And only this officer had this special key and nobody was allowed to mess with it. You'd be in big trouble. And the officer explained how this works. And he told the workers, don't try any tricks. And don't try any things to get around it because you're going to be in big trouble. He explained to Rabbi Shmuel how it works, and this is the way it was. Rabbi Shmuel was careful always to pay to the king what he had to pay. Because, of course, he didn't want to get in trouble, and this is what you have to do. And even the Torah says, Malchusa, I'm sorry. The Torah says, Dina de Malchusa Dina. The law of the king is a law. As long as it's not against the Torah, if the country has a certain law, you have to keep the law. The law is, by a red light, you have to stop. You have to stop. Don't argue with it. That's the law. You have to stop by a crosswalk, or for somebody crossing the street, you have to stop for them. I mean, this is laws that people have to keep. Everything went along fine until one day, this is a trouble that started to happen. There was a worker. And this worker, when it was time to go home, he would go to get his coat, but then he would disappear for a few minutes. His friend was waiting for him. And then all of a sudden, he would be there putting on his coat. And then they would go home. And the friend would wonder, every day, before my friend puts on his coat, he disappears for a few minutes. I wonder where he goes, because he goes over to a section of the factory that nobody usually goes over there. I mean, what does he do over there? He always like is walking down over towards that part of the factory by the wall, behind the pipes. And I have to wait every day till he puts on his coat, and I have to wait for him, then we walk home. I mean, what did he go over there for? One day, the friend decided to see what the other worker is doing, his friend, behind the pipes. And very quietly, he tippy-toed to the place that his friend was. He was standing over there behind the pipes by the wall near the middle of the factory where people don't usually go. And this is what he saw. His friend, the other worker, took out a bottle. The bottle was under his shirt. Then, behind the pipes over there, there was a hole with a kind of a plug in it. He took out the plug, and as soon as he took it out, a whole bunch of mashke started squirting out of the pipes, and he filled up his bottle. Then, when he filled up his bottle, he put the plug back into the pipe. He screwed the lid onto his bottle, and he hid the bottle back under his shirt, or under his sweater. Then he went to put on his coat like everybody else, and they left. By this time, the other worker had gone back to his place because he didn't want his friend to find out that he'd been watching what he did. And every single day, this worker would go and take the mashke out of the pipes. And his friend thought to himself as he's watching, look, what a trick he's got. He's got a way to take the mashke for free. He takes himself a bottle of mashke, he goes home and drinks it himself. And nobody finds out that he's taking the mashke. Because if he would take from the end of the pipe, first of all, somebody might see him. Second of all, it would show up on the meter, and they would see that on the meter it says one thing, and they would count how many bottles of mashke are in the boxes, it would be something else, and people would figure out that somebody is stealing the mashke because the meter is going more than the bottles they have. So this way, the mashke never even goes to the meter, because he takes it out from the pipe before it goes to the meter. So he gets away with taking a bottle every day for himself. Ooh, that's a good idea. And the friend thought to himself, you know what, tomorrow I'm going to bring myself an empty bottle. And I'm also going to go over there and take some mashke. Why should only he take mashke? I'm also going to take mashke. And the next day, a little bit before it was time to go home and put on the coats, the friend, he got there first. He took out his bottle of mashke, his empty bottle, and he found the hole with the plug. And he took it out, and he started filling up his bottle. The other one came over there, and he saw his friend taking mashke. He says, hey, what are you doing? That's my hole. What are you doing here? Go away. He says, look, you do it, I'm also going to do it. You take mashke for yourself? I saw that you're doing this, I'm also going to do it. What's the big deal? We can both take mashke. Okay? So they both started taking the mashke from there. Each one took his bottle home and they drank it up at night. And they came back with an empty bottle the next day. This went on for some time until one day, for some reason, the two workers who were friends, they turned into enemies. They got in some kind of an argument and some kind of a fight over whatever it was. And one started saying things to the other one, and the other one said things back, and they started arguing, and they started screaming and yelling. And the second worker said to the first one, okay, I'm very upset at you, and now I'm going to get you in trouble. I'm going to tell on you that you were stealing the mashke from the hole. I'm going to get you back, and I'm going to get you in trouble. I'm going to the police, and I'm going to tell that you've been stealing mashke from the hole. And the other one says, you're going to tell on me? If you tell on me, I'll tell on you. You're doing the same thing. And the first one says, yeah, but, you know, you did it first. So I'm not going to say that I was doing it. I'm going to say only you were doing it. Oh, yeah, I'm going to say that you were doing it, and I wasn't doing it. And the first one starts running to the police, and the second one ran after him. And the first one comes to the police station. You see this man over here? He's a stealer man. He steals mashke from his job. And the policeman was sitting there behind the desk. Oh, yeah? You're in trouble. And the second one says, I didn't do anything. He's doing it. He's trying to blame it on me. He's doing it. I saw him doing it. And the policeman turns and he says, oh, yeah? You're in trouble then. And each one says, he didn't do it. The other one did it. And the policeman sitting behind the desk, he's scratching his head and he's getting all mixed up. He doesn't know who to get in trouble. And it's his job to make the report and to lock up the bad guy. And he doesn't know who's the bad guy and who's the good guy. All of a sudden, the policeman gave a big hit on the table. Wait, stop. He says, I don't know who's the good guy and who's the bad guy. All I know, I have to get one person in trouble, or both of you in trouble, or nobody in trouble. I don't know what to do. Shh. Now, this policeman was not a very good, honest man, as you're going to see. He says, anybody that comes in the police station and he makes a complaint, I have to write up a report to give to the police sergeant, the chief of police, and I have to do something about it. Now, tonight is my turn. And I'm going to look very not good if I can't figure out what's doing. The chief of police is going to say, so what happened over here? Who's the good guy and who's the bad guy? And which officer was on the job by the desk? And if they're going to see it's me and I didn't know what to do, I'm going to look bad. So the police officer calls the two workers, Tim, and he says in a whisper, you know what? I've got a good idea. Good for both of you and good for me. And that way, neither one of you will get in trouble and I won't get in trouble. In fact, we'll all get good from this whole thing. And the two workers said, yeah, what do you want to do? And the policeman says, look, you work in that big mashke factory down the street, right? Yeah. Well, it's owned by a Jew, right? Yeah. His name is Shmuel Brown, right? Yeah, that's his name. Okay. Tell you what. You two are going to say a little lie. And you're going to say like this. You took the mashke. Both of you took the mashke. But you didn't take it for yourself. You took it for your boss, the Jew Shmuel. That way, you could say, he told you to take the mashke out of the pipe, that he wouldn't have to pay the tax when it comes out the end by the meter. And you could say that you had to give it to him, and he took it home for himself. And he made you do it because you're his workers. And if you wouldn't do it, he would fire you. Then you wouldn't have a job. And you had to listen to him. Because when I write up this report, and I'm going to say there's a hole in those pipes, the government inspector of taxes, the one who takes the money, they're going to make an inspection, and they're going to find that hole. So they're going to see it's there. And if you don't say that, you're going to get probably both of you in trouble for that. And that way, I'm going to look very smart because I figured out what happened. That way, neither one of you were in trouble and you could for sure blame it on your boss. He'll get in trouble. You'll go home free. And I'll look very good because I figured out this whole thing. How's that? Oh, the two workers said, that's a good idea. So let's do that. And so, kiddies, this is what the policeman wrote up in his report. And they sent the report not only to the chief of police, but into the king. Because this is against the king to steal and get out of taxes. Special police and the king came into the factory one day with their special fancy schmancy uniforms and their hats and their badges. And they come in. All of a sudden, and they go over to the place where the hole is, and they find it. Reb Shmuel never knew anything about this. And then they went right to Reb Shmuel's office, and all of a sudden, Reb Shmuel sees these big officers there, and they say, you're under arrest. You have to go now to the judges, and to the trial and to the jail, probably because you're in big trouble for stealing from the king. Reb Shmuel says, I don't know what you're talking about. And they told him, you're in trouble for stealing from the king. We found this hole behind the pipes. He says, I don't know what you're talking about. And they brought him to show it. He says, I don't know what you're talking about. And they said, there are two workers that do know what they're talking about. And you should know what you're talking about. And you should know what they're talking about, because they know what you're talking about. He says, I don't know what you're talking about. And all of a sudden, the officers call the two workers. Now, Reb Shmuel knew the two workers, but he says, what's going on? And the officer says, these two workers said that you make them steal two bottles of mashke a night, and you take it home in order that you shouldn't have to pay taxes when it comes out the end by the faucet. Reb Shmuel says, I never did such a thing. And the two workers are saying, oh yes you did, oh yes you did, oh yes you did. Reb Shmuel says, what are you talking about? And the officers say, the two workers said in the police report that they went to the police station, that if you would not get your mashke from them, you would fire them. Shmuel says, I never did such a thing. And the two workers saying, oh yes you did, oh yes you did, oh yes you did. Reb Shmuel sees that he is being framed. He's being set up. They're making up this lie against him. And he realizes they're just trying to get out of their own trouble. The officers now take Reb Shmuel to the police station, and they order him to show up for a trial in a week by the big courthouse. It's in a different city. He's got to go there by a train. And he had to pay a certain amount of money that he should be able to go home, even to say goodbye to his family. And now he tells his family what's going on. He's in big trouble. And nobody is probably going to care that it's a lie, because the judges in those days did not like Jews too much. If they're trying to blame it on a Jew, the judges could be all too happy to say, okay, a Jew did it, goodbye, 25 years in Siberia, or 50, in a jail camp, in a work camp. Who's going to care? And the workers could just go home. Reb Shmuel sees he's in big trouble. But Kinalachi knows that everything that happens in the world, whether it looks to us that it's good or Chas V'Shalom looks to us bad, everything somehow comes from Hashem, and everything is somehow good. That's what we believe. Everything is from Hashem, and everything somehow is for the good. Reb Shmuel Kinalach, he says, I'm going to my Rebbe, the Rebbe Maharash. Before I go to the trial, I'm going to my Rebbe. I'll tell my Rebbe what's going on. I'll ask him for a bracha. I'll ask him what I could do. And then I have no choice. I have to go to the trial. There's no way to get out of it. Rebbe Shmuel Kinalach, he went to the shul of the Rebbe Maharash. And he asked to see the Rebbe Maharash in Yechidus, where you go in by yourself to be with the Rebbe. He went into Yechidus and he told the Rebbe Maharash the whole thing. And at the end he started to cry. And he said, Rebbe, me'ayin yavoi ezri. From where will my help come? I need help, Rebbe. Please, help me. And the Rebbe thought for a minute in his halakha way of thinking. And right away he smiled and he says, you know what it says in the rest of the pasuk? Actually, it says in the next pasuk, Ezri me'im Hashem. My help is from Hashem. Oisei shamayim va'aretz, who makes the heavens and the earth. Don't worry, right after your question is your answer. From where will my help come? Your help is going to come from Hashem. And the Rebbe told him, Shmuel, when you leave the shul, you go and find a yid who's in trouble and who's also asking the question like you asked, Me'ayin yavo yezri, where will my help come? You find somebody that needs help and that's wondering from where his help will come, who doesn't know how he will be helped. You go and help him. And in that schus, because you did that mitzvah of helping another yid who's in such a trouble, Hashem is going to help you from your trouble and find a way to help you also out of your trouble. You help another yid out of his trouble, and Hashem is going to help you out of your trouble. When Reb Shmuel heard these words, he got very, very happy inside, and he really felt for sure Hashem is going to help him. He left the Rebbe's room, he went out in the shul, and of course his friends, the other Hasidim, wanted to know what's going on, if he could say over something from the Rebbe, and he just said, he asked them, who do we know that is in big trouble, that needs help? And right away they said, Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim needs help. Did you hear what happened to Reb Chaim? Reb Chaim had a store. The store burned down. Everything was destroyed in the fire. And now, of course, he cannot work in his store and he cannot make money for his family. And his kinalach are going around hungry. And they need food and they need clothes and they need all kinds of things. And Reb Shmuel is not the kind that's going to go ask people for help. He really needs help. And he's probably in his house wondering how he can help himself out of this mess that he's in, because he needs a lot of money to build his store back and to go back to work and for his family. Reb Shmuel says, okay, thank you for telling me that. I have to go now. Reb Shmuel went to Reb Chaim, and he found, just like the Chassidim had told him, Reb Chaim was in this kind of a mess, feeling very bad, but he's not the kind to go and ask for help from people. Reb Shmuel Kinalach, he didn't have any problem with money. Baruch Hashem, he had plenty of money because he made a very good living, and he was certainly happy to share his money. His problem was something else, as we know. He spoke to Reb Chaim, and he told Reb Chaim, look, I found out what happened to you. I would like to do something for you. And believe me, it's going to be a help for you, but it's going to be a bigger help for me. I would like to lend you as much money as you need to start again your business, to build your store again and to fill it with all the things that you need. Then you can go to work and you can make money for your family. And Reb Chaim was so happy. He couldn't believe it. He says, I was wondering where my help would come from to be able to do that. I didn't want to go around asking people for money, but I wish there was some way that I could just go back to work and make money for my family. And Reb Chaim said, this is like an answer to my prayers. Mamish, out of nowhere, it just came like this. And Reb Shmuel said, it's not out of nowhere. Everything is from Hashem. This is also for you from Hashem. I was only a shliach. I'm a shliach that I'm able to help you out with this. And you're a shliach to help me, because I also need a help. And I also don't know where my help will come from. But I think that now everything is going to work out okay. I can't tell you how it's going to work out okay. All I know is that something good is going to happen. And he told Reb Chaim his problem. Reb Chaim wished him well, that everything should work out for him. And now Reb Shmuel leaves and he goes now to say goodbye to his family. He's got to go to the big trial in the city of the courts and the judges. And Reb Shmuel goes on the train and he travels far, far away to the big city where the big buildings are, where they have the trials. And he goes now to the trial into the courtroom, and it's filled with people. Mostly the families of the workers that are going to lie against him. And as soon as Reb Shmuel walks into the courtroom, they go, "Boo! There is that Reb Shmuel who owns the Mashke factory, who was stealing from the government." And everybody said, "Yeah, he steals from the government, he should be sent away to prison, to jail." And they say, "Boo!" And now the judge comes out dressed in his long black robes, and he has on his head a kind of a wig, a kind of a shaitel the judge wears. It's a special thing that a judge wears, and he looks very serious. And he sits down in his big chair, and he takes out a big hammer, a wooden hammer, and he claps the table. "Okay, it's time to begin this trial of the workers against Reb Shmuel.